Blog Talk Radio.
Slow down, touch your life. Don't you know there's friends to be found? Lift your eyes and see the world.
Welcome to the Sunbury Press Book Show, sponsored by Sunbury Press, publisher of books under 11 different imprints, sold worldwide, wherever books are sold. I'm your host, Lawrence Knorr, and today we have author Kelly Park. Kelly is a certified safety professional. He's also a retired sandlot athlete, never having the skills to take it to the next level, but enjoying every moment of those pickup games. He enjoys reading about many different subjects, but books about pre-World War II baseball are his favorite. While searching for one to read, he came across a review that said, "The book is so well written, the reader will feel like he's on the field with the players." Kelly's first thought was, "I've never had the ability to play pro baseball, but I sure have a lot of great memories of playing youth baseball. I wonder what the pros remember about their youth." Searching for a book on this subject resulted in zero hits, so he decided he would gather the stories for a book. Kelly's debut book, Just Like Me, When the Pros Played on the Sandlot, Volume 1, is the first book to tell the story of professional baseball players' memories of playing youth baseball. 36 former professional players recount amazing stories of growing up playing baseball and events that ultimately shaped their careers. Kelly Park, author of Just Like Me, welcome to the Sunbury Press Book Show.
Lawrence, it's great to be with you. Thank you.
I find the topic very interesting as we were talking on the pre-show, getting ready for this, about youth baseball. Of course, both of us have played youth baseball as well, and we won't bore the audience with all those details. They're more interested in the professionals, I'm sure. But it's a fascinating approach you took here, and you gathered a bunch of players, you communicated with them, and then you went through sort of a process where you got into different subjects. So maybe you could tell us your method. Who did you contact? How did you get a hold of them? And then maybe give us sort of an overview of the topics you covered with them.
Sure. Well, as I entered into this project, I have no connections in Major League Baseball. I have no connections in the literary / publishing world. So I was starting with nothing. Being a risk manager, safety consultant, typically when I have a project, I will lay it out and plan it out before implementing. So that's what I did. I just looked at this this book as a project. So I laid out a plan on how the book would look, the questioning, the objective, and how in the world I was going to contact these players was the one variable that I really didn't have an answer for.
Yeah.
So initially a lot of my opportunities and ultimate interviews was right place at right time. The first player I interviewed was a gentleman by the name of Jim Hickman. And it just so happened I was at a customer's facility that I had been visiting for 10 years. And out of the blue, and this was probably 2 weeks after I conceived this idea for the book, the owner, he pointed at a gentleman. And he said, "Hey, you know who Jim Hickman is?" And I said, "Sure, played with the Cubs." He said, "Well, that's his son right there." Hey, you know, why he introduced Mr. Hickman's son, Bill, to me at that moment in time after I'd been visiting them, I'd been there 20, 25 times prior, I have no idea. But from that interview, I found out that a close friend of mine that I play golf with was related by marriage to Phil Ruth. From there, Phil introduced me to Hawk Taylor. By chance, my sons were in a high school national competition in Baltimore. I knew Boog Powell, sat outside of his barbecue stand before games, and we had tickets to the games. So, Lawrence, my method to contact players is as varied as the players that I talk to.
Yeah, I'm sure. Now, I was looking down through the eight. Is it 18 that are in the first book?
Yes, it is.
Cool. Yeah. And so, yeah, I had baseball cards for a lot of these guys when I was growing up. So some of them are familiar to me. Actually, they're all, almost all of them are somewhat familiar, but you got Fergie Jenkins in there. So Hall of Famer Fergie Jenkins. How'd you run into Fergie?
Well, as I got into the process and really made some connections with these players, I developed a connection within Major League Baseball. And the final, I'd say, 10 to 12 interviews, and one includes Fergie, was obtained through this connection that I and managed to make. And, you know, Fergie, I was scheduled to meet with Fergie in Miami during the All-Star festivities. I think that was in 2017. And he had told me, he said, "Hey, Kelly, look me up. I'll be at so-and-so hotel. We'll get together and we'll talk." So I get into town, and I called him, and he said, "Kelly, I'm so sorry. My wife has fallen ill. I've not been able to make it." So I wasn't able to interview Fergie in person. He said, you tell me when it's going to be good for you, and you call me." So we set up a time, and, man, we were on the phone for probably an hour talking. But, I found of the 18 that's in Volume 1, I interviewed in person 10 of them, and I found my in-person interviews, they weren't, I wouldn't say better, but I was able to read the expressions on the players' faces, so I was able to alter my questioning slightly to maybe elicit additional information, but they were all great.
Yeah, I wrote a book on Eddie Plank. Of course, he's long dead, but then I did a before that, I did a book on Carl Shive and got to know him before he passed. Youngest baseball player in Major League history and then American League history. And so I get you. We spent several days with him, and what a riot. I can't imagine you sitting down with this many different guys and the kinds of things you covered. Another one I saw that, well, I'm interested in all of them. We don't have time to talk about all of them, but Jim Cott was somebody. He pitched for the Phillies for a while. And I know when I flipped his bubblegum card over in the back, I was always like, "Ooh, he pitched for the Washington Senators. They're no longer around." You know, I thought that was really interesting and how long his career was. And yeah, he certainly must have had an interesting perspective on things.
Very much so. His father was known as Mr. Baseball in their hometown of Zeeland. And his father instilled a sense of the importance of history with Jim. And honestly, I think Jim's father in that history or his love of the history of the game really enabled Jim to have such a long career, because Jim would have been a bonus baby. And for the listeners that aren't familiar with that era of baseball, in the 50s, if a major league team signed a player out of high school or college to a contract of $4,000 or more, then that major league team had to put that newly signed player on the major league roster for at least a year. And there was a 3-year period where they required them to be on the roster for 2 years. So you take a player like Hawk Taylor, who's in the book. Hawk was an absolutely unbelievable youth player, high school player. Every team, every major league team in the country wanted him, wanted to sign him. He ultimately signed for over $100,000. I've read different numbers. But Hawk was stuck on the major league roster for roughly a year and a half. Got all total maybe 7 at-bats when he should have been in the minor leagues honing his skills. Well, Jim Cott's dad knew what was happening, and Jim was offered a $25,000 signing bonus. But his dad said, no, I think we're going to take the $3,500 that was being offered. So Jim went to the minor leagues for a year and a half, 2 years, honed his skills, built his confidence, and then look what he had, like 24, 25-year major league career. I really believe that his dad had a lot to do with this longevity, the longevity of his career.
should also add here that this book isn't just about Major League Baseball. You also have a couple of women who were professionals in the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League. And then, you know, it was an interesting development in recent months where the Negro Leagues, at least for the more recent period, I guess it was the 20s through the 40s, were you know, were recognized as major leagues. So that was a welcome change in baseball, at least as far as recognizing statistics. I see Bill Greason on here, and I think you have a couple other Negro League players. Maybe you could talk about how you got in touch with them, and I'm sure they had some, maybe a little different spin on some of the stories they told.
They did. With both Bill Greason and Jim Zapp, when you asked me how I contacted the players, with Reverend Greason and Jim Zapp, I went straight to the White Pages, the AT&T White Pages, and their number was in the book. Picked up the phone, called them, and they said, sure, come on down, we'll talk. Mr. Greason, what was interesting with the Negro League players is that they didn't have a lot of opportunity with youth baseball, not like the other players I talked to. Jim Zapp played a lot of sandlot ball growing up, but nothing organized. His organized baseball started in the military when he was stationed in Hawaii during World War II. Bill Greason was on Iwo Jima, but he started out playing softball. And Reverend Greason, he told me a story about the team that he was on and the league that he played in was sponsored by area funeral homes. And the funeral home directors would not let the kids take the uniforms home with them because they knew that they wouldn't come back. So they'd have to come to the funeral home to get ready before the game. And Bill was telling me that inevitably these kids, him and his buddies, would start snooping around the funeral home, and the funeral director would wait for him to get into a room with a body, and then he'd turn the lights out on them. He said, you can't imagine how the screaming started when that funeral director would do that. But, yeah, Bill and Jim had a lot of great stories, as well as Lois Youngen and Katie Horseman. Their stories about growing up was just as interesting, entertaining as the major league players. Lois's dad played at Kent State. He was a pitcher at Kent State University. So he taught Lois how to play and how to catch. So Lois started playing on a local youth team with the boys. Well, the other teams was giving the boys on her team such a hard way to go about having a girl on the team that they asked her to quit. And she said it just devastated her. But they played three games without Lois and lost all three games. And they decided that it would be better to play with a girl than to lose without one. So she was quickly asked to rejoin the team.
That's great. So it seemed like you had some structure to your interviews because your book is set up with chapters and sections like, you know, their hometown, their family, their coaches, nicknames, and so on. Maybe is that the case where you pretty much had a formula as you talked to each one? I'm sure you couldn't stick to it, but maybe tell us about that.
Well, the chapter titles was my worksheet, and I made sure at some point in the conversation I would touch on that topic so that I could have some consistency in the interviews. When I first started out, my interview with Jim Hickman and Phil Ruth, my plan was to record the stories, take notes, and then write their story. I quickly realized that wasn't working, that the essence of their stories was being lost. So I pivoted and decided I was going to transcribe the interviews. So, yeah, I wanted that consistency. So I made sure that I cover the same topics with every player. Now, I would let them go their own path, take their own path as to how I got this information. But it was a free-flowing conversation, but I just wanted to make sure that I touched on all these topics as we went down. Now, that last chapter, Extra Innings with the Pros, when I contacted the players, and I think that's what got me an audience with the players, is that I presented my project, and I was completely upfront with them. I said, you know, I'm not interested in your professional career. I want to talk to you about your youth and your youth career and how that impacted you as you went into your major league career, your professional career. And I think that intrigued the players so that they were willing to listen to me. And then as we moved along, it was just kind of an open-ended conversation. But the Extra Innings with the Pros, that's when that storytelling gene or the DNA. I think every player that becomes a pro, they get a new gene, and that gene is storytelling, because every one of these players that I interviewed had these great stories, and they would pivot into these stories of things that happened as they were pros. And you know the readers can see that these players had a lot of stories to tell, and a lot of them, they would start to tell me something, and I could tell they didn't really want to say it. So I'd show them. I said, look, I'm turning this off, because I wanted to hear the story. So I'd turn the recorder off, set it down. They'd tell me the stories. And then when they were through, then we'd go back to the recorded interviews. Yeah, I heard some good stories.
Yeah, I know when I was talking to Carl Scheib, he pretty much said the same thing. And he told me some things, especially about major league young guys traveling on trains in the 40s and what they did on the road. He's like, I want this book to be, read by the kids and not, I'm like, all right, Carl, I promise not to put that in, at least not while you're alive. And he laughed. He said, well, you better not put it in when I'm dead, because I'll haunt you. In his Pennsylvania Dutch accent. It was funny. So, you really have a pretty broad and deep interview with these players, and I think the readers will really enjoy the stories that they tell. A lot of them surprising, and again, we're limited in time. We've got a little more than 10 minutes left, so no time to tell a lot of these stories. We'll have to encourage the readers to pick up the book and dig into it that way. But could you sort of summarize, like, are there any themes here? Like, I'm guessing that the thread of a lot of these stories might be they weren't always the best player in their area at the time, or maybe got recognized at an unexpected moment, things like that.
That varies. You know, some of the players were the best, others were not. Like Whitey Herzog, I asked him if he was the best player on the team. He said, oh, no. He mentioned a player, and he went on to play a little bit in the minor leagues, had a back injury. Several of the players said that, oh, there was better players, but whether it be their home life or just a bad decision, something prevented them from going on and pursuing a professional career. But the underlying theme, for me, number one was just the family support that all of the players talked about. They all talked fondly about, whether it was their parents or coaches. Every one of these players could remember their youth coaches and their names. I mean, it was really interesting to hear that. Also, just the attitude that a lot of the players exhibited or told me about when they were young, that, you know, they were just out there having fun. They weren't necessarily just go, I want to be the best, I want to be a professional player. They just wanted to go out and have fun, whether it's playing in an organized game or what a lot of the players told me, they feel like kids need to be out playing pickup games, making up their own games, that the kids are relying too much on structure to go out and play baseball, and that true love of the game is being lost or has been lost. That they really would like to see these kids get out and play whatever pickup game they can make up, wiffle ball, whatever it may be.
Was there a player who knew they were going to be a pro someday?
Hawk Taylor's, yeah. His uncle, two of his uncles played professionally, one in the major leagues with the Yankees, and he had a cousin that played in the minors, and his dad was a really good player. But as Hawk told me, he said, my dad could make more money driving a truck than he could playing minor league ball, so he quit.
Yeah.
But Hawk played with his uncles when they, in the off season, they'd teach him. And he said, I knew from the get-go, I was going to be a pro player.
Yeah, that's interesting. And as far as, what was the most astonishing rise out of the group you talked to, the one that probably, that I never thought I'd make it, but I did. Was there anybody like that? I know you said Whitey wasn't the best, but.
I tell you, yes. And any young listener and young reader of this book, the story they need to read is of Doug Flynn. Doug Flynn was undersized. He was a good athlete, but he was undersized, and he was not recruited at all to play professional baseball. He was a good basketball player, so he played on the freshman team at the University of Kentucky. So obviously he had some skills, but he was one and done at the University of Kentucky. So he went to a junior college in southeastern Kentucky, not playing any sports, just kind of horsing around, playing some adult league softball. But he started growing and started getting stronger. On a lark, he went with his friends to a Cincinnati Reds tryout. And those skills, along with that growth spurt, caught the attention of the scouts. And after three tryouts, he was signed by the Cincinnati Reds. 2 years later, he's in the major leagues.
Yeah. I remember Doug Flynn. I don't remember him being a star, but I remember him being pretty solid.
He was solid, and he was traded to the New York Mets and won a gold glove with the Mets. So he was a good player. He was on those Big Red Machine teams in the early 70s.
Yeah, but they were pretty good.
He's the one. I'll tell you one other real quick. Whitey Herzog, what was interesting, what he told me about, he felt like he was the cause of his high school team, his junior year, his high school baseball team losing the state championship game. And he also felt like he was the cause of his high school basketball team losing the state tournament his senior year. And then he goes on, he plays in the major leagues, he manages, and he's managing the Royals, and he's getting beat by the Yankees, getting beat in the World Series when he would get past the Yankees. And when he finally won that World Series with the Cardinals in 82, he said, man, I feel like I got the monkey off my back. And, you know, he's a pro, and he was still going back to his youth carrying a burden. So, yeah, there's a lot of lessons to be learned in this book outside of just the stories of the players playing as a kid.
Whitey's definitely a case, though he had a good pro career, he definitely made his mark as a manager. And
yes, he did. I miss Whitey Ball. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. That's fun to watch. So one of my favorite topics is nicknames. And being a baseball historian myself, there's some really fun nicknames through the years. And I'm just wondering about the nicknames chapter, if you have an anecdote or two there about how they got their nicknames. Anyone in particular stand out?
Well, Boog is the obvious one. And I read...
Oh, you mean that's not his given name?
That is not his given name, no.
I'm just kidding.
And he didn't get that nickname because he picked his nose. His dad, the stories that was out there was that his dad would always say, hey, look at that little booger run. And it just eventually got shortened to Boog. So I asked Boog about his nickname, and expecting to hear this story, he proceeds to tell me that, you know, I never really knew how I got my nickname, but I was talking to my aunt Eunice about 2 weeks ago or 2 months ago, and she told me that she's the one that gave me this nickname, and it's from, and she proceeds to tell him the story of how he got his nickname, his true nickname here. And as he's telling me this, I'm thinking, holy cow, I've not heard this or read this anywhere. I think I'm getting a scoop. Well, Lawrence, I don't know where you were at the time, but I could have used you because we could have got the scoop of the century on how Boog actually got his name if we could have got this book out in time. But in the end, Boog published, it was about 4 years after our interview, Boog published a book, and he told that story. And that's the only other place that I've seen this particular story told is, okay. Of how he got his nickname.
Well, we won't tell everybody. They'll have to buy Boog's book or this book.
Well, I'd prefer them to buy my book or our book, and they can see how Aunt Eunice come up with this nickname. Hawk Taylor got his nickname from a movie serial. This was back in the 40s called Hawk of the Wilderness. Who else? Whitey Herzog. His actual nickname as a kid was Riley. He didn't get the nickname Whitey until he got into the minor leagues.
Okay.
So there's a lot of Fergie Jenkins. Obviously, Fergie. His nickname was Plywood. As a kid, his friends would, but Fergie is the one that stuck. So there's a lot. And that's one thing that's missing, I think, is back in those days, everybody had a nickname. I had a nickname growing up. Not too many people that I'm aware of have nicknames like they did, as we did.
Well, Kelly, you're not going to believe this, but we're almost out of time. And what I'd like to cover here in the last minute or so is, I know you've got this book one out. Tell us a little bit about book two and what else you're working on.
Well, book two is just a continuation of this book. I've got players like Bobby Richardson, the great New York Yankee player, Hall of Famers Don Sutton, Phil Niekro, who we just lost. Phil was a great guy. I interviewed him in person. Had the great pleasure of interviewing Tony Oliva, Louis Tiant, and Bert Campaneris at the same time. So you take three gentlemen who were born and raised in Cuba, and you take a kid that was born and raised in Kentucky, and you try to get those four individuals to communicate. Let me tell you, it was an interesting time that we had together. So, a lot of great players interviewed there. I've got an idea for another book bouncing around about what makes a talented player a success versus not a success, sort of these five tool players that is labeled. And why does one player who's a five-tool player make it and become an all-star and another five-tool player not make it? What are the characteristics? What are the circumstances? What are the occurrences that makes that happen? So that's just something I'm kind of mulling around right now. We'll see if that goes any further.
If you can figure out that secret sauce, I think a lot of organizations would be interested in it. Hey, we've been talking to Kelly Park, the author of Just Like Me. Kelly, it's been great having you. We'll have you back when book two comes out. How about that?
I look forward to it, Lawrence. And I want to compliment you and your team on this book. It looks great. I am so happy with it. So thank you very much for what you've done.
Thank you, Kelly. Take care.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
This has been the Sunbury Press Book Show on the BookSpeak Network. Be sure to check out our books at www.sunburypress.com or search for our titles on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and other booksellers worldwide. If you enjoyed this podcast, there are hundreds more available on the BookSpeak Network. You can find our channel on blogtalkradio.com. Thank you.